From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
Great chefs come in all shapes, sizes, and ages. The one thing that they all have in common is great food.
Martin Yan is best known for bringing his zeal for Chinese cooking to American audiences through his long-standing public television program, Yan Can Cook. Now, the renowned chef and cookbook author is focusing on the cuisine of another country, Vietnam. Presented by KQED, Martin Yan's Taste of Vietnam charts Yan's culinary adventures across the country and his collaboration with Vietnamese chefs. And we'll talk to him about the new series and get tips from him for cooking Vietnamese staples like vermicelli noodle soup and Shaking beef. Join Forum for our next hour after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. Martin Yan, the iconic PBS chef of Yan Can Cook, joins us in studio for this Forum hour. He's known for his presentations on Chinese cooking, and he premieres a 26-show series this fall on the sights, culture, and cuisine of Vietnam with cooking demonstrations and a personal tour of Vietnam by Martin Yan. And we welcome to the Forum program. Good to have you here.
Good morning. Zhou San in Chinese, or Zhao Chen.
Let me get that pronunciation right. Say it once again.
Zhou Shen is Cantonese. Zhou Shen is Mandarin.
Yeah, but look how close they are.
Yeah, very, very close. Actually, I just came back from a cultural and culinary tour of Asia last night, 11 p.m.
But still have your usual energy and fluency despite maybe some jet lag. Those who don't know Martin Yan, by the way, he's been associated with KQED for 30 years. He has 30 books under his belt. And this is all about Vietnam. And it's an exciting series because it sort of takes us to places, not only in Vietnam, but stateside as well. I want to talk about the different episodes with you. But first, I want to talk about the kind of cultural kinship between Vietnam and China, because most people associate you with Chinese cooking and have associated you through the years with Chinese cooking. And it goes back 1,000 years. I mean, the connections between Vietnamese cuisine and Chinese cuisine, despite the French influence later and the American influence later. Yeah.
Well, you know, cuisine is always evolving. It doesn't matter if it's Chinese or European or Japanese cuisine. If you look at the cuisine of Asia, there's a lot of fusion of all the cultures, like Malaysian cuisine, Indonesian cuisine, you see the Dutch influence, the Filipino cuisine, you see the Spanish influence, you see the cuisine of Vietnam, you see some Chinese influence and also American influence, as well as French influence. So I think cuisine is always evolving, and that's makes the cuisine so interesting and so diverse. It's just the fusion of all the ingredients. You go to Vietnam, you see roast ducks like Chinatown, roast duck hanging all over the place. Then you see French baguettes and French bread and sandwiches all over the street. So you see a lot of very interesting, and of course you see a lot of hamburgers too.
It's what we call hybridized cuisine. Yeah.
Right.
And yet many connections to the Chinese particularly, and you show some of these in the episode. I mean, you actually go over to a rice field and have us observe the cultivation of rice and just really the whole process of getting rice grown and to the table and so forth. You learned a lot on this trip, didn't you?
Well, definitely. You know, Vietnam is a rice bowl of Asia. And because of the weather, the agricultural, they have a lot of dragon fruit and guava, pineapple, you know, it's abundance. That's the reason why it's a very rich agricultural land. And because the Mekong Delta also is very rich, very fertile. So rice is grown everywhere, all over the place. So, you know, Vietnamese people are blessed with all these abundance of natural resources and agricultural products, particularly rice.
Well, you take us to the Mekong Delta, too, which is rich in coconut farms, and you take us to a wholesale market right on the water.
Yeah.
There are all these fascinating sights and things to do. But talking about rice being associated with Vietnam, I was in Cuba a number of years ago, and it astounded me to learn that Cuba imports more coffee from Vietnam than it produces itself, I mean, which is all too revealing and in many ways disturbing. But the fact of the matter is, you take us in a world of coffee, at least in one of the episodes, coffee-flavored ribs and coffee crepe cake and Vietnamese coffee. They have their own brand of coffee.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people don't realize, you know, Vietnam, besides rice, Vietnam also grown. They are now, I think, is the number one exporter of coffee in the world.
That's right.
And then on the highland of middle Vietnam, they actually grow mountains and mountains, fields by fields of coffee. And they actually have this some kind of this wild animal, and they eat the coffee beans, and they get it out of their system, and then it turned out to be better because of the enzymatic reaction. So stronger coffee that they actually sell it at a premium price.
Talking with Martin Yan, and by the way, his series has already premiered. I said it premieres in the fall. It's on the air, and you can actually see it on
just started
KQED9. It has already started, and take us also in the course of these adventures that you take us on to a tribal village in North Highland, and you, Martin Yan, are the guest of honor there with all kinds of tribal dance and music. And then I mean, each of these places kind of has its own particular stamp of food and cuisine.
Yeah, no. Because if you look at the map of Vietnam, they stretch from all the way from the north to the south, north adjacent to the border with Thailand and China, and all the way to the South China Sea.
Border with Laos, too.
Yeah, with Laos and Cambodia. So you see a lot of influence, and they have the Cambodian influence, the Thai influence, the Malaysian influence, and you got all kind of influence. So you see Vietnamese cuisine, Vietnamese culture is very, very exciting and very, very truly fusion of food and culture. And we travel all over. We go to, we visit and actually stay in a tribal a home with no light, just candle. And they cook with all the twig and they raise all the free-range dog, chicken, and hawk. It is fascinating.
The whole trip kind of is fascinating.
It's an adventure.
It is an adventure. It's an odyssey. Yeah. Yeah. Plus, people can learn, and I promised this, so I'm going to ask you this. We were thinking actually of getting some audio for today's program, and there's one video where you're just using knives in ways that are nothing short of spectacular. But we thought, what would the sound actually be like to hear just those knives chopping and everything? I want to ask you a little bit about that, but maybe some tips on some Vietnamese staples. I had mentioned this early on in the billboard about vermicelli noodle soup or shaking beef, which many people enjoy immensely, of course.
Well, you know, rice is, as I said, is the truly main staple. And the Vietnamese don't eat that much meat. If they do eat meat, there are two different types of meat that they eat quite often. Is pork, chicken, and, of course, beef. You go to a lot of Vietnamese restaurants all over the world, particularly in the U.S. You got rice noodle soup. It's always served with beef. And of course, beef.
You were speaking on behalf of beef when you were on your Asian tour.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, I was in Asia, all over, in particular Vietnam. Actually, a friend of mine actually bought into 6 container of beef from Omaha, the state, and Iowa, and all those meat west country. They love it. And then I showed them how they can use the premium USDA beef and a variety of dishes, a variety of cuisine in Vietnam. It's quite interesting.
Give us some tips, though, about shaking beef, as long as we're talking about meat, because a lot of people go here to the Slanted Door and love that dish. Yeah. One of my favorite dishes, I must say.
Well, actually, the word shaking is because you're shaking the frying pan, you're shaking the wok while you're stir-frying. Basically, like a wok shear, pan shear, a beef, a marinated beef, and they use herbs and spices. And then always, in Vietnamese cuisine, that's the reason why it's so healthy and so exciting. They use a lot of fresh herbs and spices.
They make it differently than they do here in the States, then? I mean, because
they're very similar. But the only thing is, some of the fresh herbs and spices are not available here. There are a couple of farms in Sacramento and the Stockton area. The Vietnamese smaller farmers, they actually raise a lot of herbs and spices. But some of these you're not able to find in supermarkets, because you go to a typical Vietnamese restaurant in Vietnam, you will see they have give you a whole basket of fresh herbs and spices and lettuce and all kind of fruit. So basically, the reason why Vietnamese cuisine is unique is very one of the healthiest diet. They use less salt, less oil, and a lot of veggie, a lot of salad. That's why.
That's why they have less heart attacks,
right? Yeah, and also you go to Vietnam. I have never seen any people in Vietnam are overweight. Nobody go talk about diet. It's just they always believe it's about diet. Diet is not one time, 2 months, 3 months. It should be a lifelong practice of a lifestyle. You eat healthy throughout your life and exercise. That's true diet and health.
We're talking to Martin Yan, and Martin Yan's Taste of Vietnam is actually on the air. It premiered this September, the month we're in, and he's also the author of Well, he was the host of Martin Yan's Taste of Vietnam, but also Yan Can Cook, and it airs Saturdays at 10 a.m. on KQED9. So some tips when making, say, vermicelli noodle soup or shaking beef that people can actually apply in the kitchen?
Oh, yeah. They can actually easily make it. Shaking beef is very, very easy. And you stir fry and shake the beef and marinate it properly. You can even use marinade with a tiny bit of pepper, freshly and ground pepper, and a tiny bit of fish sauce, a tiny bit of lemon, a lime juice. And then you stir fry with a tiny bit of sugar. And then when you serve it, you always can serve with fresh herbs and spices and wrap it up with leaf or with rice paper. And then you eat it, or you just serve it like a main dish. So it's very functional. And then any dish in Vietnam, they serve with rice or rice noodle soup, chilled rice noodle or tossed rice or serve it room temperature. You just put on marinated lemongrass pork chop or chicken or shaking beef, just serve, toss it in.
So all white rice, no brown rice?
Very rarely I see brown rice in Vietnam. But I think people are more and more into organic rice, brown rice, and multi-grain rice.
And, of course, the Vietnamese, like the Chinese, are eating with chopsticks.
Oh, yeah, they use chopstick, and the main seasoning is sugar, chili, fish sauce, and lime juice. Very, very simple seasoning.
There's an episode where you take us into the caves and dragons, and the recipe that comes out of there is this crispy fried shrimp, which, is sort of droolable when one looks at it, but also steamed white fish in a spicy bean sauce. I mean, these are easy to adapt to one's kitchen here in the States and just do on a daily basis. You're kind of, but in this particular episode, you're inside these limestone islands.
Yeah, this is actually Ha Long Bay. Actually, one of the most, probably the world-renowned tourist destination, and it's probably one of the most well-known in Vietnam. And you have over 1,000 of these limestone islands, and they're all coming out from the bay, at the Ha Long Bay. And actually people, fishermen and villages, actually living right on the water. There's a floating population, hundreds, a couple hundred in each village, and they're all over. And they have schools, they have little hospital, they have little market, and this is fascinating.
There's also, since we're talking about some of the fascinating tourist-type spots, there's an episode you have called Life is a Beach. I mean, the beaches are pretty spectacular, too.
Oh, yeah, because it's such a coast, it's such a long coastline all the way, stretching all the way from the north to south. And they're beautiful. There are not too many people to spoil it, and there's no factory, there's no pollution. So the natural breeze and the sand is white, and it's unbelievable. And everywhere you go, you got beautiful beaches. And what makes it fascinating is a lot of fishing villages along these beaches. And people actually go out, and they have the basketball, and they have people, the bigger boat, bring in the catch, and then a little boat go out there because it's so shallow in some of the beaches. And then they actually, all the people, they go out and actually line up and move the thing by the basket and bring it back to the shore. And then the beach, someone's beach, become a fish market. It's fascinating. And everybody, tourists and local people, are like, go to the fish market and just buy fresh, jumping, live fish.
Well, what else is kind of fascinating, just by association, I was thinking about these one-dish wonders that you put the spotlight on. I mean, here in the United States, especially like in New York City, there are long, long lines for croinuts, you know, for it's a cross between a croissant, I think they call them cronuts, croissant and a donut. And people line up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, waiting to buy these things. But you have these one-dish wonders in Vietnam,
yeah.
Right?
You know, as I said, you know, as I travel all over Asia, particularly in Vietnam, I see local foods and local specialties. People get up very early in the morning. They're all in a motorcycle, and very few people walk on the street. They're all either in car or motorcycle. There are probably millions and millions of motorcycles running all over the place. It's very chaotic, but it's so far fascinating. I have not seen any motorcycle in serious accidents. It amazes me.
You also were at an organic co-op, and there's a long history of organic food in Vietnam.
Oh yes, because the farmers they gotta sustain, and the natural disaster and the weather, and a lot of time they have to work together. So you see a lot of these farmers actually working together as not a commune but like a co-op. So they help each other, they take care of each other. So when they have things. The same thing is the fishing village. They also have co-op. They work together as a team and as a community, so they can take care of the business as not only the catches, not only the products and the produce, but also the marketing and sales mechanism.
And often very shrewd and entrepreneurial, these people. I think the last time I had Jacques Pepin on, he had authored a book all about things that you can make very easily in the kitchen.
Yep,
you know,
yep.
Not necessarily fast food, that has all kinds of bad connotations to it, but things that you can make quickly because life is so full and so forth. Did you learn any recipes that you would want to convey along those lines?
Well, actually, Vietnamese food is very home food, home cooking. Vietnamese food is just peasant cooking, home cooking, and for 30 years on the Yan Can Cook Show, my slogan is, if Yan can, so can you. If Yan can cook, you can cook too. And there's no reason to cook something that nobody can duplicate at home. Because I don't intend to try to train master chef in the kitchen, even though I have restaurants and I consult for restaurants and chef. But I think the key is to use the seasonal. There's a Confucius said, you do not eat things that are not fresh. You only eat with the season. You eat, if you live in the water, you live by the water. You live in the mountain, you live by the mountain. So you use all the ingredients, which is very, very readily available in season and fresh. You go to Chinatown, you go to Vietnamese restaurant, when they say fresh seafood, fresh food, they're in the tank, they're swimming, they're jumping and dancing. And you turn around in 5 seconds, in 2 minutes, the dish and the eel and the water snake, which is already in the water, 3 minutes ago, is on your table.
Some Americans don't like this, of course. They find it affects their palate in a negative way. But, I mean...
Well, that's reality. That's survival. You got to eat what you have to eat to survive. And we're lucky, we're fortunate in America. Everything is so abundant. But in many parts of the world, even in part of China, on some of the remote area in Vietnam, in some other developing country, food is still very precious, very scarce. So you got to eat like the Chinese and the Vietnamese. They eat with anything with four legs except a chair and a table. They eat anything that flies except a kite and a plane.
We're talking with Martin Yan of Yan Can Cook fame and also now a Saturday program, which you can see at 10 a.m. on KQED9 called Martin Yan's Taste of Vietnam. And if you'd like to talk to Martin Yan, we invite you to join us, particularly if you're looking for certain kinds of ways of cooking Vietnamese food, or if you have some thoughts about Vietnamese cooking, or for that matter, about Vietnam and places. Because this is also kind of a travel odyssey, as we've been saying, takes you into many of the places, both agrarian as well as rural in Vietnam, and gives you an experience and a major taste of Vietnam. Advisedly use that language. You are welcome to join the program. Our toll-free number is available, and you can join us now. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your phone call, so feel free to be part of the program. It's 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or join us by going online, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. But feel free to join us with any questions or comments you might have. You went on an Eco River cruise. Let's talk about that. I mean, this is very popular to tourists who want to see Vietnam.
Yeah. And in fact, you go all over Asia, Malaysia, Philippines, Indonesia, Singapore, Thailand, and Vietnam in particular. They love to bring you to the country for eco-tourism because there's so many things that you can actually live in with the farmers, with the fishermen, and you work with them, you live with them, you eat with them for a few days. It's fascinating. You just live the life of a Vietnamese or any Southeast Asian farmers. It's fascinating.
Well, you certainly lived the life of the Vietnamese in so many different quarters that you went to, but you also have an episode in Little Saigon, and I was curious about the recipes that you chose to be linked to your experience in Little Saigon. One was a sautéed duck breast And one was an avocado smoothie, which sounds on the face of it really quite different to my way of thinking. But the Vietnamese imperial rolls, which are much more common in Vietnamese restaurants.
Well, actually, a lot of people don't realize in the central Vietnam where the imperial palace and the middle kingdom, all the earlier Vietnamese kingdom and the dynasty actually rests in the Hue and in the area. They still had the ruin from those dynasty days. And the food and the cuisine, actually, they call the imperial cuisine, the royal cuisine. It's fascinating. It's very delicate. It's just like some of the Thai imperial and royal cuisine. Very delicate. Most of them make with rice paper, rice flour, steamed rice roll. It's fascinating. It is delicious.
Well, you get, if you go to a Vietnamese restaurant, you get your choice on the imperial roll, even if you want a vegetarian now and so forth. Is that common in Vietnam itself, where they give you these options? You know, you want this, you can have it with beef or pork, or you can have it just vegetarian?
The typical Vietnamese restaurant menu is not as big as a typical Chinese restaurant menu, but they do have enough variety and a lot of variety. And pork is definitely served in many ways. Chicken served in many ways because as you travel to the middle part of Vietnam or the countryside, you see free-range chicken. That means running around they in the backyard and in the field, and they just eat bugs and insects. And that's why they have such intense, wonderful flavor and much, much less fatty. And the skin is crunchy. So it's very different. It's all free-range. And you see a lot of the Vietnamese cuisine. It doesn't matter what meat, what protein you serve, whether it's beef, chicken, or pork, or fish, always served with fresh herbs and a lot of lettuce.
The insects have protein too, of course.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
How do you feel generally it holds up here in San Francisco or in the Bay Area as far as Vietnamese cooking? I mean, I happen to love the Slanted Door. Bill Clinton once said it was his favorite restaurant, but then he loved McDonald's too, so I don't, you have to put that into. But does it hold up pretty well in your mind?
Oh, yeah. I think there are more and more Vietnamese restaurants all popping up all over the country, all over the world. And Vietnamese food, because it's healthy. It is simple, and the flavor is very enticing to people that are concerned about diet. You walk in a restaurant, you hardly see anybody that using tons of salt and tons of oil.
And a lot of sugar.
And enough sugar. When I cook Vietnamese food, I don't use as much sugar, but I do notice the most pronounced dietary practices are a lot of fresh herbs. A lot of vegetable.
Well, again, if you would like to join us, we welcome your involvement in the program. We're talking with Martin Yan of Yan Can Cook, and now Martin Yan's Taste of Vietnam, which airs Saturdays on KQED9 at 10 a.m. And we're talking not only about the Vietnamese cuisine and the great food that Vietnam is associated with and identified with, but also Martin Yan not only gives us a culinary tour, he gives us actually a tour of Vietnam. takes us to Old Hanoi and Da Nang and many of these distinctive towns like Hoi An and Hue, and we welcome your involvement in the program. Our toll-free number, again, should you care to join us, is 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. I'm Michael Krasny. Well, the theme of this hour is all about Vietnam. That's the music from Martin Yan's show, Martin Yan's Taste of Vietnam, brought to you by KQED Television and presented by KQED every Saturday, 10 a.m. on KQED 9. And Martin Yan is the host, and he's best known, of course, for bringing his zeal for Chinese cooking to American audiences through long-standing public television program called Yan Can Cook. Here to answer questions you might have about, well, Vietnamese cooking and Vietnamese cuisine, as well as just Vietnam itself, because, as I said, the program is also a really visual travelogue about Vietnam. And we're going to go right to your phone calls, and let's begin with Jean. Good morning, Jean.
Hi, and this is a wonderful program. We have eaten a meal made by Martin Yan. We have a new challenge, though. We have eaten in Vietnamese and Thai restaurants for a long time, but now my husband is on a salt-free diet, and we just don't know how to order.
Okay, I think the only thing that you have to worry about is the fish sauce they use, because fish sauce is probably the principal seasoning for Thai, Cambodian, and Chinese and Vietnamese cuisine. And fish sauce is about 19% salt. So what you do is you will dilute. You can use some liquid, add a homemade broth, and dilute the fish sauce. And you still get the flavor, but actually you cut down on the salt, okay? And also try to use as much as natural herbs and spices. If you look at the Vietnamese cuisine or Thai cuisine, they do use a lot of Thai basil, cilantro, fresh mint, and all kind of things. Try to use as much fresh spices, then you can cut down on the actual salty seasoning. That's the way to go, okay?
Unless you don't like cilantro, like the man here behind the microphone.
Sir, that sounds, if you don't like cilantro, use mint. You know, that's all kind of mint. You got lemon mint. There are six or seven different type of mint. Some of the mints are really flavorful, very aromatic. So that what makes Vietnamese cuisine so fascinating and so healthy is because they do use a lot of fresh herbs. And I grow it in my backyard.
And here's a question, another question about fish sauce. Megan, hi, you're on.
Hey, I was touring Vietnam a few years ago for a couple of weeks. Fabulous country, wonderful people, great food. However, we were in the villages and we were watching them make fish sauce, and none of us have eaten it since. We're really horrified by what we saw with the making of fish sauce, and I'm wondering if when you eat fish sauce in the States or you buy it in a store here, is it coming from those same villages with the flies all over the rotten fish?
Actually, I don't know which fish sauce manufacturer you went and visit. I just came back and I visit a quite a few of them. And just like anything, just like soy sauce or any seasoning, some of the smaller local independent manufacturer, their sanitation, the safety,
food safety is really a problem.
Right, it's a problem, and it's food safety can be a problem in Asia because they developing country like Vietnam and other places, not like in the U.S. or Germany or Holland, and then have a totally different high standard. So I actually went to visit a fish sauce manufacturer. They actually run and owned by somebody from Los Angeles. This guy actually at university graduate, and it's very nice and clean. So you see a lot more of these type of things. So I think it's important to identify the label and the brand, and don't buy. And there are also fish sauce from Thailand, the fish sauce from Vietnam, and then you can. I think it's important to identify the right brand. And if you have any question, you can email me at yankincook.com, and I'll give you some references, okay?
Thank you, Megan. You know, it's always astonishing to me, and I don't know if you have an observation about this, just kind of off of our topic here for just a moment, is how much the Vietnamese seem to have affection and real respect for Americans. And what astonishes me about that is because our history is not a very glorious one when it comes to the country of Vietnam.
Well, I think the Americans have, just like any country, any culture, there's so many good things for everybody to admire. American culture, American subculture, and a lot of American philosophy is actually also well-received in China. Just came back from China. And the people, the young people and the educated people, they love the sense of freedom. They love the people that they're able to voice their voice, and they love the creativity, imagination.
But we fought a war with Vietnam. That's what's always surprised me. We fought a war not only with Vietnam, but in Vietnam. And you would think that, I mean, it's always astonished me how countries that we've never been at war with, the residents are very anti-American, but not in Vietnam.
Well, American have been Americans' cultural influence and and education and culture and music and arts has influenced the world. And if you look at history, American at war with Japan, American at war with Germany, now we're all buddies and friends and allies. So I think it has a lot to do with it. And also there's a new generation, about 30, 40, 50 years ago, that the young people, the educated, they understand, you know, you cannot hate somebody. You cannot take the grudge for forever. And you just have to move on. And I think the young people in Vietnam and the people in the U.S., and they all will understand that this is a one world, one dream. We all have to live together in the same global economy. You just have to deal with it and learn to accept each other and be friendly to each other.
Talking with Martin Yan, and let's go to Douglas next. Douglas, you're on. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much for this great show, and thank you, Mr. Yan.
Thank you.
I'm a big admirer of yours for all the wonderful things you've shared with us. My wife and I live in Oakland, just across the bay, and my wife and I, about 3 years ago, she was pregnant. She is Vietnamese, and she'd been looking for real home cooking, and we were headed to this particular restaurant on 12th Street, and it happened to be packed that night, and so we just figured we'd go to the corner restaurant that had just opened, and we have never been anywhere else. They have this wonderful dish that you I wanted to ask you about. It's called Bumba Whey,
yep.
And it's a soup, I guess, from Whey. But this is the owner has her mom as a chef, and it is wonderful, and I just wanted to ask about that, but also to have people, you know, check this little corner on Webster and 12th, I think it is, in Oakland. But again,
Douglas, you've given them a nice plug. It also prompts me to ask Martin Yan, do you have a favorite local Vietnamese restaurant?
Well, you know what? I'm fortunate because being in this business, a lot of the restaurateur and chef are personal friends. So a lot of time when I go to a Chinese restaurant or a Vietnamese restaurant or a Thai restaurant, I would walk right into the kitchen and say hello to everybody, and then it will fix me something. I never order things from the menu, even at a typical Chinese restaurant.
They never ask you to cook?
No, occasionally I just walk, because the best way to learn how to cook is walk right into the kitchen and see how they do it. And if I don't know how to do it, I ask them.
Walk right to the walk. Can you tell him about something about that soup that he mentioned?
Yeah, tell me the flavor. Yeah, tell me the flavor.
It is, you know, it is this, you know, it's called Bumba Whey. And I don't know much other than the fact that, you know, it's very spicy if you order the regular spicy type. But it's just a blend of all these spices. But again, also, you mentioned the fresh basil, all these veggies. And it's just very, you know, with a clear broth. You know, and one thing this lady does, I guess, is she's very good about, you know, doing things the day off. But I don't know anything about it. That's why I was curious if you knew about this soup, which apparently is the specialty in that region of Hue.
I would go and check it out myself. You know, what makes Vietnamese cuisine so unique is a lot of home cooking. And you see a lot of elderly lady selling steak on the street, selling street food. And a lot of the kitchen actually is managed by women, by ladies. And they all do their own thing and they use their own style. Even though they have traditional thing, but they still have very personal touch. That's the reason why a lot of time you go to a Vietnamese restaurant, you go in a hole in the wall, or either Chinese restaurant, or Vietnamese restaurant, or Cambodian restaurant, you go in a hole in the wall. Sometimes you'll be surprised and amazed how fresh and how wonderful, because they don't have to worry about, they probably shop every day.
But they can put their own name on it?
Right.
Like they, in this case, it would be the
right signature. They put the signature. If this is what they like to do, they put it in. So you may not be able to find the same thing in Hue or even Vietnam or in other restaurants, because this lady cooking in the kitchen probably is his personal favorite. And it's mother's and grandmother's recipe. So a lot of these are very, very specialized, amazing, delicious home recipes.
And we thank the caller. We're going to go to some emails. Rick says, I cook a lot of Vietnamese food, love shaking beef. My question is, how do you cook the beef on a gas stove? Is it possible to cook the beef without overcooking it on a home stove? I have had it in restaurants where the outside is seared and the inside is somewhat rare.
Well, the key is, particularly beef, you never want to overcook the beef. And if you cut the beef in cubes rather than thin slices, it's easier because you don't want to overcook them. When you cut in the beef, and also when you cook beef, after you marinate them, you let it sear. You heat up your frying pan. If you want, you can use the cast iron frying pan or very heavy-duty frying pan. Heat it really up just like you do a goose liver in the old days. Now you cannot eat that. Pan sears. Do not stir-fry it first. Pan sear on both sides, and then you shake them. This way, you sear the meat, and you seal in the juice. Outside is very crispy, nice, and cooked, and sear, and slightly caramelized, but inside is still nice, and moist, and juicy, and red. And that's the key. High temperature and short time.
A listener who asks, what does Mr. Yan think of the rise of the celebrity chef, and has the Food Network been good for food?
I think I'm one of the cooks, and I remember when we started, it's just Julie Chayo, French chef, Graham Kerr, French, a Galloping Gourmet, and a Yan King Cook Show. Now you see an explosion. I think everybody loves food. Everybody likes to go out to eat, and food is everyday, you know, life. And food and cooking brings people together. I'm excited to see there are a lot more cooking program, a lot of food program on PBS and also the Food Network and Cooking Channel and also and Create Channel on PBS. I think more people get involved and more people aware of the safety, more aware of the cultural backdrop is better. For all of us to enjoy life, because we have to eat. You are what you eat. You eat every day. Might as well learn and see how different people, different chefs, introducing different cuisine, different culture. And on the Yan King Cook Show and the Taste of Vietnam, we not only about talk about food, we talk about people, about heritage, about life, about a culture, about music, about tradition, about history, everything.
Once had a student who said to me, you are what you eat, therefore if you eat lousy, you're lousy. I don't know if that syllogism exactly works, but it's always stayed in my head.
Look at me. I started with the Yan King Cook Show started with KQED since 1981. And I have not gained, if you ever see me in person, I have not gained more than 2 pounds.
Gee, you may have good metabolism, Martin.
I exercise a lot and run around. But I think is food, diet and exercise go hand in hand. And I think diet is not a one-time diet or not a crash diet. Diet should be a lifelong practice of good eating, good food, and watch out what you eat and exercise.
Let's get to this because actually a couple people emailed this, and I'm sure you will hear more of it if you haven't already. Make sure it is mentioned, Jackie writes, that Vietnam consumes a high amount of dog meat and the poor dogs are often skinned alive.
When I was in Vietnam, I have not went to any of these places and I have not eaten any of those. I believe more and more people, particularly young people in Vietnam, aware of this. And I guess we all have to be aware of the fact that in developing country, when food is scarce and precious, and we put our judgment.
Probably heard some of these stories though, Vietnamese people off the boat, boat people chasing dogs in Golden Gate Park. I mean, they were rampant, particularly when you started out back in 1981.
But I think the young people, the new generation, I'm quite sure they're aware of the fact that this is no longer a very civilized way to enjoy.
And a lot of it's urban legend. It's come down into urban legends.
Right, and you're talking about things that are in the past, and I think people are learning and they're being educated, and I think in another 20, 30 years, and I would probably think that people would never heard about things like this anymore. The society and the people are moving and moving along, and many of this new generation are educated right here in the U.S. And I'm quite sure these people, they would not. Well, we have dogs, puppies at home. We love them. So you go to some part of China, they still do it. But there will be less and less. You go to Hong Kong, you never heard of it. anymore. But in the 50 years ago, you see that. But so I think people are more and more aware of respecting life and animal and the animal right, not only human right, but animal right
and
too.
Seeing dogs as domestic pets, which they often are. Here's Jacob who tweets, what's your favorite hard to find ingredient in U.S. groceries that can be substituted, and what's the alternate?
Well, you know, just like a lot of people love rabbit. A lot of people love a certain meat that my wife doesn't eat rabbit because we used to have a rabbit as pet. So talking about food as an ingredient is quite fascinating because each culture look at food differently. Recently, I was in Asia. I was actually eating live scorpio or fried scorpio. Insects are very high protein, no fat, and a lot of protein. So when we look at food, I think the most important thing is I have not tasted dog meat for ages. When I was a little kid, I remember some of the neighbors, they would have that, but I didn't even know what it is. And later on, they told me. But ever since, I haven't really tasted anything. But I think any meat, the most important thing, you cook it properly, whether it's chicken or pork or anything. If you don't cook it properly, that no meat. So if you undercook them, they're raw. You can't eat them.
I hate to say it, but like if I go into an Indian restaurant, I will rather have the dark meat of, say, chicken tandoori than the light meat. I know the light white meat is much more healthy, but the dark meat is much tastier.
Oh, definitely. You know, in our restaurant, NY China, we serve white meat for all the chicken. We serve white meat. But at home, when I do it, I eat white meat. I use white meat for certain dishes. I use a dark meat for certain dishes. There's certain things that just taste better dark meat because of the more flavorful. It's a little bit more marbling.
But you said you don't eat much dark meat anymore?
I don't. No, in our restaurant, we serve no dark meat. We serve white meat. But at home, I do use. So I think the key is eat everything in moderation and watch out your diet and just don't overdo it. You know, I hardly eat anything with sugar, cream, or butter. You know, my diet is really on after meal, I eat a lot of fresh foods.
Well, you look healthy, and so you are vital, and we're going to go to another caller. Tiffany, join us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, first, I really love your food. I think you have one of the most impressive knife skills of anyone I've ever seen.
I learned it from Jacques. Jacques is the master. I am his apprentice. No, I think just anything else. You know, you have the right tool, you have to have a sharp knife, and you practice. Everybody can do what I do. That's why I've said, Yan can cut, so can you.
I don't know about that.
Practice.
So my question for you is if you could describe the difference between the food in northern Vietnam versus southern, and if you have a personal preference between the two.
Well, I'm a world traveler. I'm a cooking teacher, and I'm a chef. Whenever I go to a place, I try to appreciate the food in that particular region. Just like Asia, you go to India, you got northern India. Like Italian, you got northern Italian food, southern Italian. The food in northern Vietnam is more hearty because it's colder, cooler. And they like the rice noodle soup, they normally serve with chicken rather than beef. You go to south, they have people in the south, they normally have beef. And also the people in the south eat something a bit more spicy. And you always have fresh chili.
Let me thank the caller. Actually, we got a tweet here that says, Bun Bo Hu is the spicy beef noodle soup that the listener in Oakland is referring to. And another listener says, was there any particular dish you ate on your travels that quickly became your favorite, and which one surprised you?
I love a wonderful pancake that they use. They mix the egg and the rice paste together and make a big pancake and a big frying pan. And then they will add all kind of available seafood and spices and herbs, right, and roll it up and pan fry on both sides. They fold it like a big, big omelet. And I love it because it's outside is crispy and golden brown. Inside is nice and moist and a lot of savory stuff, as well as fresh herbs and spices. Try to make at home. It's very easy.
It's like those pancakes you get in a Chinese restaurant where they give you plum sauce, right? Sounds similar.
They actually use the same thing. They use fish sauce, lime juice, and a tiny bit of sugar as a dip. But that is fascinating. And you can add anything left over. You can add fish, you can have shrimp, you can have scallop, you can add anything inside. But the key is not only the meat, the protein, but also have bean sprout, fresh herbs and spices, a lot of texture, a lot of flavor. So you bite to each bite and explode in your mouth in terms of flavor, texture, and
you're getting me hungry
savory.
Here, Martin. let me get a caller on, and that's Bill. Good morning. Bill, you're on.
Going to Vietnam in November, and two questions. One, the fish sauce here always has wheat in it, and do you know if the fish sauce in Vietnam has wheat? And
no wheat, recommend? No wheat. That soy sauce made with wheat, because soy sauce is fermented from soybean and wheat flour, okay? But they are actually have soy sauce without wheat. That's why, like the tamari, the soy sauce fermented only with soybeans with no, because some people are allergic to gluten. You have to have gluten-free. So you can actually buy soy sauce, but fish sauce definitely is fermented, salted fish.
One listener wants to know, how long can you keep fish sauce in the refrigerator?
Any of the seasoning, I prefer, unless you use like the Vietnamese, they use in every single dish and all as dipping, as marinade, and soup and everything. But if I were you, I would have a tight seal container. And if I have a bottle, I would put a little plastic wrap, wrap it up, and then put a cap on. So it would, because otherwise the whole refrigerator smelled like fish sauce. If I were you, I'd put it in the refrigerator.
And you are listening to Forum. We're talking to Martin Yan. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to another caller, and that's Mark from Sunnyvale. Mark, you're on. Hi.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Good morning.
Chef Yan, my wife and I have enjoyed your shows and your recipes.
Thank you so much.
I'm wondering if you've heard of the Blue Zone water, or what the chefs refer to as the secret sauce.
Well, you know, as I mentioned earlier, all the chef, whether it's home cook or master chef, they all have their personal touch. And a lot of times they create something, and it's exclusively, it's like a signature. And the recipe and the seasoning the profile and the recipe itself is very personal in a way that if you like something a little bit stronger, you add it in. I happen to love the fish sauce flavor, particularly when the fish sauce, when you smell it yourself, when you smell it by itself, it's very, very strong, overpowering. But if you mix it with some other thing, when you cook them with other thing, when you serve in a broth or say, it is actually mellow it down. It's really very well-balanced, very aromatic, and very savory. So it's just like any recipe, any seasoning profile, you just have to do it the way you want to do it. There's no one single recipe, no one single dish. People can say this is the very best. There's no such thing. We all have different palate, all have different expectation.
Do you think we all have different taste buds, too?
I think our taste buds, some people, they cannot identify an apple and an orange. You know, if you're blindfolded.
I don't mean that. I mean more the sense of, I mean, I guess, hate to admit it, but what you'd call a picky eater. There are certain tastes I just don't like. I mentioned cilantro, for example.
No, definitely.
And there are people who love cilantro, can't understand, you know, how anybody could be, well, dissatisfied with the taste of cilantro.
Well, I think something can be developed. The palate can be developed. I remember when I first came to the America, and I never really taste any cheese. And when I smell the cheese, it's like stinky tofu. Just like you go to Taiwan, you have stinky tofu.
Well, some cheese is stinkier than others.
Right. Yeah. So I think once you get used to it, my kids love cheese. Love any kind of cheese because of the aroma. Once you accept it, it's great. The king of fruit, durian. A lot of people find it. It smells like hell. It tastes like heaven. You know, people think durian is the stinkiest fruit, but in the beginning, 10 years ago, I can't take it. I can't even smell it. You cannot even bring it in a hotel or bus or any public arena or plane. But now I can eat the whole durian by myself. Love it.
Let me thank Mark for his call. And let's get you on. Steve, you're next. Hi. Steve, are you there? No? Okay. And on to another caller. And that's Trom. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you, Michael, for the program, and Mr. Yan.
Thank you.
You make me hungry and very homesick because I am a Vietnamese, and
yeah.
I just love to hear your positive experience when you were there, and especially the cuisine. The reason I'm calling is just earlier, I heard an earlier caller mention about the bún bò Huế.
Yeah.
And that's the dish, the beef noodle, but it's not like the one from the south or the north. It's just only specialized in Huế.
Yeah, very delicious.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, I can just give you a quick list, I mean, a quick ingredient of what is it, the make it so special, because it cooked with beef, and then you use lemongrass. And you also use another ingredient that I'm sure in Chinese cuisine, you use the ground shrimp paste.
Well, that is also quite common in Indonesian and Malaysian curry.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I love it. When you use it properly, that makes it really aromatic and savory. And people, when you smell it by itself, it stinks. But actually, if you are gourmet connoisseur, when you put them all together, and they are really, really delicious, and it smells really good.
And we thank you for your call, Tram. Just get this in. Eric from Martinez writes, my favorite Vietnamese food is the banh mi sandwich, which is French roll and aioli sauce surrounding delicious, fresh Vietnamese ingredients. It perfectly portrays cultural culinary fusion. You can find out a lot more about that fusion as well as Vietnamese cooking if you watch Saturdays at 10 o'clock on Channel 9, KQED9, Martin Yan's Taste of Vietnam. Thank you so much for being with us. And congratulations on another series. And get some sleep. You have your usual amazingly strong energy, but I know you haven't slept much and you've been on a plane internationally. Most people couldn't do this.
No, when KQ to my home is always my home.
So welcome home, Martin.
Welcome home.
We're here with you. This is your home, Monday through Friday. It's called Forum, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and our engineer is Danny Bringer. We get online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and for all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.